The Lord be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Luke. The crowds asked John the Baptist, "What should we do?" He said to them in reply, "Whoever has two cloaks should share with the person who has one, and whoever has food should do likewise." Even tax collectors came to be baptized, and they said to him, "Teacher, what should we do?" He answered them, "Stop collecting more than what is prescribed." Soldiers also asked him, "And what is it that we should do?" He told them, "Do not practice extortion, do not falsely accuse anyone, and be satisfied with your wages." Now the people were filled with expectation, and all were asking in their hearts whether John might be the Christ. John answered them all, saying, "I am baptizing you with water, but one mightier than I is coming. I am not worthy to loosen the thongs of his sandals. He will baptize you with the Holy Spirit and fire. His winnowing fan is in his hand to clear his threshing floor and to gather the wheat into his barn, but the chaff he will burn with unquenchable fire." Exhorting them in many other ways, he preached good news to the people. The Gospel of the Lord. Well, no one likes to be told what to do. And the Gospel we have today, in the Gospel of Luke, John the Baptist perhaps goes into the most detail of all four Gospels as the words that John is saying to the people who he attracts. And in each case, they're saying, "What should we do? What should we do?" And John doesn't mince words. He basically tells them, "This is what you must do." His basic message is prepare the way of the Lord, and different people, different walks of life, this is what you must do to prepare the way of the Lord. Soldiers, tax collectors, general people who are gathering around him. And it's interesting because we find this specifically in the Gospel of Luke, which is known as being the most compassionate of all the four Gospels in its presentation of Jesus. But while it is the most compassionate, it is also the most direct and the most unrelenting. It doesn't mince words. While this is the only Gospel in which Jesus says, "Father, forgive them, they know not what they do," it is also the only Gospel that states Jesus as saying, "I did not come for peace, I came for the sword, I came to light a fire on the world, and I am anxious for that fire to be lit." Not exactly sounding like a compassionate gospel, but we see that balance in the Gospel of Luke. In some cases, it's very, very compassionate. Some of the most beloved stories are told. The Good Samaritan, the prodigal son, the story and the parable of the rich man and Lazarus. We're familiar with these stories, found only in Luke. But they are also stories that, when we really read between the lines, give us very unnerving lessons, such as, the Good Samaritan speaks to the very strong prejudices and bigotry and, dare I say it, racism that the people of that time had against Samaritans. They hated Samaritans. You look at the prodigal son, and half of the story deals with the deep resentment of one son over celebrating the return of someone who was lost. And when you look at the beginning of that parable, it says to the Pharisees Jesus addressed this parable, who were critical of him for dining with sinners. And when you look at the story of the rich man and Lazarus, we are pleased with Lazarus, the poor man, resting in the bosom of Abraham. But the ending is a dialogue between the rich man and Abraham, and a stern warning of what awaits us when we fail to live the gospel and the standards we're called to live. And that if we can't do it with what's right there in front of us, then not even someone coming back and warning us will do it. So Luke has very familiar stories, very compassionate occasions, but also very unnerving and direct moments. And we see that in the Gospel of Luke, in the words of John the Baptist. And perhaps we can relate to such things as, you know, people of the Catholic faith, of the Christian standard of living. It's not just simply warm fuzzies and uplifting feelings and affirmations. We have challenges, teachings, and standards that really, at times, unnerve people a great deal. We call them controversial. But they're only controversial because the church is so direct and the church is so true to the standards we're called to live. And it can be an unnerving thing. And on the one hand, our faith is one of great comfort that it gives to people, but it is also one that challenges us to overcome our human frailties, turn away from our sinfulness, and embrace that gospel. And one of the things we are told, especially on this particular Sunday, is a disposition we must always have as followers of Christ. And that is, we must be people of joy. Today we celebrate as Gaudete Sunday, the third Sunday of Advent. And it is a Sunday that celebrates the joy we are called to have as followers of Christ. Doesn't mean we're a Pollyanna type of joy where, you know, I'm kind of glad the house burned down because we needed to remodel the kitchen anyway. But one that in the midst of whatever we might experience, there's always that joy. Calls to mind a scene from a movie from the late 40s called Quo Vadis, in which Peter Ustinov plays Caesar Nero. It's about the early persecutions of the church. Caesar Nero is already descending into madness, especially as he has condemned the Christians to persecution and death as a result of the burning of Rome. But as Nero sits in the arena watching the Christians being fed to the lions or being crucified or being burned alive, one of the things that is causing him to descend further and further into madness is that the people are singing. They're not wreathing in agony. They're not crying out for mercy. There's a look of peace in their eyes. There's a look of joy in their faces as they go to their death. And in a great scene in which at night he is going through the arena looking at the mangled corpses, which thankfully are off screen, of his victims, he's going further and further into a frenzy as he shrieks, "Why are they not with expressions of terror? But they have looks of peace and joy in the midst of this suffering." That is, of course, an extreme example, but nonetheless a very real one as we celebrate the martyrs throughout our church's history who did not die in despair, but died with the joy of what was awaiting them as they gave their lives for the faith. We are called to be joyful people. And yet, alas, I suppose we all know some people who remind me of another line in an old film, if you remember the movie, The Ten Commandments. I think one of my favorite lines in that film is at the beginning when the princess's handmaids, before they find Moses in the bulrushes, are kind of mocking Memnon, the princess's servant and slave, played by Judith Anderson. And one of the things they say to her is, "Oh, Memnon, you're only happy when you're miserable." And alas, I suppose we've met people like that, and perhaps we all know them. You know, there is very little joy. And I suppose every year at this time in Christmas, if we pay attention to any of the news, we do see factions in our own societies, and even as we come to the joyful season of Christmas, who seem bent on taking things many of us have grown up with, whether it's songs from romantic comedies or children's animated Christmas specials. It's almost like they go through everything with a fine-tooth comb to tell us why we should be miserable about all these different things. I wonder how much joy any of those folks have, to a point where I don't want to say Merry Christmas, I want to say lighten up. And yet, what disposition does that come from? It's not only a disposition of being unhappy and unjoyful, but a deep resentment of anyone who is more joyful than them or not as miserable as they are. And we unfortunately see it in our society, families, associations, who knows. And it comes from truly a disposition that is lacking in joy. That is lacking in joy. So much so that they don't want that joy in anyone else. But we have it as a command, as a command. Such an important command that Paul says it not once but twice in his letter to the Philippians. "Brothers and sisters, rejoice in the Lord always. I shall say it again. Rejoice. Everyone should know who we are because of our joy. Mother Teresa, who worked with the poorest of the poor and the lowest of squalor, with people who had no hope whatsoever, this was her mission. And yet she said what was essential for her and her sisters in ministering to the poorest of the poor is that it must be done with joy. We must bring that joy to those that we serve. And again, it's not a shallow, cheesy joy, but a joy that keeps us grounded in whatever experience we have, that keeps us from falling into despair, that keeps us falling into a perpetual sadness or cynicism of everything in the world. It keeps us to a certain degree lighthearted because we always know the reason for that joy. Whether it be in a simple everyday life, if we want to turn on a Christmas special that we grew up with, or whether it's in extreme circumstances of living at a time or in a society in which there is great hostility toward the faith we profess, which occurred in the earliest decades of our faiths and our church's history and still continues in certain parts of the world today. The command we are given when we say and we ask, what must we do? What should we do to prepare the way of the Lord? Among all the different commands we might receive, depending on our own different walks of life and our different circumstances, all of us, one way or another, as followers of Christ, receive, among others, one very general command of what we should do. And that is, we must be people of joy. As we go forth in these next few days to prepare to celebrate the birth of Christ, but also throughout the course of the year, let us not be people of sadness, cynicism, despair, and sorrow. Let us be substantial and grounded people who rejoice in a profound joy in the faith that we profess.